Cross Music Hall, coming to you from Hollywood as usual, but due to flood conditions via KFI, RCAC, and fence by regular lines. Starring Bing Crosby with John Scott Trotter and his orchestra, the Paul Taylor Choristers, and Bob Burns. Bing's special guests for this evening include Miss Hour, Maureen O'Sullivan, and the Foursome. And here's Bing Crosby.
If I am fancy free and love to wander, it's just a gypsy in my soul. There's something calling me from way out yonder, just a gypsy in my soul. I've got to give vent to my emotions. I'm only content having my way. There is no other life of which I'm fonder, just a gypsy in my soul. No cares and no strings, my heart has got wings. If I am fancy free and love to wander, just a gypsy in my soul.
Idle hour.
Well, that sounds like a very handy handle for a snack bar, Victor. Which brings us to a moot point. You know, we're scribbled here on your check chart under the word remarks, I find, quote, "For some time now, boulevardiers and habitués of the smarter Hollywood haunts have been startled by the absence of Misha Hauer from his usual corner table at the Greasy Spoon, where he is wont to sit, come cocktail time, idly twirling an aperitif in his artistic tapering fingers, his blood surging to the mad Spigani rhythm as the head sawdust whacker wanders over to his table to serenade him with Tipsy Doodle," unquote. Now, what's the story on that, or have I been on too long?
That's called for me, tell him I'm out.
Yeah, I couldn't think you would, you know, after that. The fact is, Mason, we got the grapevine that you've been feeling the pulse of your public through the medium of La Appearance Personnel.
You don't mean to tell me Mitch's been playing vaudeville, huh?
Yes, Bob, to put it bluntly, I've been in vaudeville.
Well, now, that's nice work if you can find it. No wonder we didn't know where you were.
How long you been out fooling the folks, Mitch?
7 weeks.
Good business?
Oh, 6 weeks we played to capacity. But the 7th week, oy.
That must have been the town I did all my split weeks in, Mitch. Where was it?
Bob, the audience were so tough, I'd rather not mention the name of the town.
Yeah, I guess maybe you're afraid some of them would write and tell you why they didn't like you. Go ahead.
Bob, I doubt if anybody in that town knows how to write.
You mean the old B.O. with C.U., huh?
Well, the people came to the theater, but only to hate me.
Oh, now listen, Misha, hatred is akin to love.
Mine wasn't.
Huh?
Outside it was 2 below 0. For 25 cents, they could come in and spend a day in a warm theater.
The lesser of two evils. Now, they'd rather gape at you than slowly freeze to death.
And they were so cold to me, I had to go outside between shows to get warm. But in vaudeville today, Bing, even the people who like you are difficult.
Well, you must tell me some more of your interesting research.
Well, they come to the theater because they like you. They see your act, then they see the picture. Then instead of going home, they say, "Oh, it's nice and warm here. Let's see Hauer again."
Such devotion ought to make you real happy.
Well, the trouble is, when they see you again, they know all the jokes.
Uh-huh.
And when they sit there, instead of going, they go, make that up.
I know, runaway.
Yeah, boy, he played with that one, didn't he?
I know just how you must have felt, Misha, only I didn't even get the heads until once I was mistaken for Crosby.
Oh, I had no such luck, Bob.
Well, honestly, Misha, it was a beautiful sight. The time they thought I was Crosby, I walked out on the stage and started to play my bazooka, and the whole audience stood up in a body and went, boo, boo, boo.
They didn't even boo, boo, boo me, Bob. It was so terrible, the last performance I got so mad, but so mad, I threw 2 grapefruit at the audience.
That's a nice switch. The actor's throwing fruit at the people. It's a handy way to set yourself in solid with the patrons, Miss.
Well, the moment I let go of the grapefruit, I knew I'd done the wrong thing.
Too late, however, to retrieve the flying citrus.
Well, I didn't worry about that. That wasn't what worried me.
No?
The very moment they left my hand, I knew they'd come back. And they did.
Well, you pardon old nosy Ned, Mitch, but how did you happen to have 2 grapefruits handy?
Oh, I needed them to play the dishes.
I should have known that.
Yeah, you know, Bing swoons the minute anybody mentions this fella, Debussy.
You're a great composer, Bob.
Yeah, I know, but it ain't you kind of surprised, Bing, to hear that all you got to do is stick a spoon in a grapefruit and Debussy squirts out?
Well, you know, I could never get much more than a little Sibelius, and sometimes, in vintage years, possibly a Susan of Stravinsky.
You'll never do better than that with a spoon. The way to get the Debussy out of a grapefruit is to roll it up and down on the keyboard of a piano. If you have 2 grapefruit handy, I will demonstrate.
Oh, but we, or you, I, wouldn't be without them. Right in the fruit and vegetable compartment there, the piano.
Very well, I will show you.
It's another conspicuous first for the craft music hall, my friends. Not satisfied with the
that Jose Iturbe has played Debussy for us, nor that Leopold Stokowski and the Philadelphia Symphony Orchestra have knocked out a little Debussy here, and despite the fact that various members of the Metropolitan Opera Company have from time to time sung his songs in the hall, tonight we are to hear Debussy played on the piano as he has never been played before. By Misha Auer, Avec Lee, a grapefruit prayer. Oh, happy moment. Play, Misha. I want to tell you that certainly beats Burns' bazooka.
I'm telling you, Mace, if you had a good Arkansas watermelon, you could play the Carnegie Hall.
You say that beats beyond the bazooka?
Oh, by far.
I admit it's just about the fruitiest Debussy I've ever heard. Of course, I could be wrong, but wasn't that one of his more obscure works? Sounded like a little thing called Feu de la Fête.
After hearing that, Misha, I can't understand why only one of the 7 weeks of yours is bad.
Well, Bob, it is so difficult for us of the legitimate theater to find a vehicle that will please everyone.
Well, I'd have been satisfied if I could have found a vehicle that would please anybody.
Yeah. I fumbled around futilely for years myself, searching for the proper vehicle until I ran into a little open barouche called Whiteman.
You were very fortunate, thing, to find something so substantial.
What did you use, Miss? One of Dostoevsky's lighter pieces, or perhaps a Stark Ibsen affair?
Oh, my vehicle, thing, was an old droshky.
Old droshky.
One I used with some success on the Bosch circuit.
The Bosch circuit. Tell me more.
Well, please, thing, let me forget those 7 weeks in the road. They did something to me. Now that I'm back in Hollywood, things we have seen change.
For example?
Well, for one thing, while I was away, my wife put up 2 large mirrors in the living room.
Oh, that must be just your imagination.
No, Bing. I'm told they were put there so I can see how foolish I look sitting around the house doing nothing.
Well, that's certainly something for reflection.
Bing, a joke like that... Bing, a joke like that takes me back to my little vehicle on the board circuit when I sang that grand old song, My Sweet Baby.
Now, Mister, you ain't going to tell me you sung that in the act you just done.
No, I didn't, Bob, but maybe I should have. It was always a good finish for me on the Bosch circuit.
Well, what's good enough for the Bosch circuit, Mister? Always be good enough for us.
Well, it's better as a trio. So, if you, Bob, and you, Bing, will join me...
Oh, we'll swing it out of this world.
Oh, we'll kill it.
My Sweet Baby, sung for us in the Bosch circuit manner by the Kraft Music Hall's Blintz Boys. Misha, Binksha, and Bobsha. A pickup, Professor.
Oh, she is my sweet baby. She's my sweet baby. I ought to know, and how. I made a great selection for my affection. I ought to know, and how. And did you pop that question? Say it's just a question on what a day it will be. My friends have bought confetti and rice already for my sweet baby and me.
Pick it up, boys.
Oh, she's my sweet baby. She's my sweet baby. I don't know, and how.
And how? And how, you say? I was only a little newsboy. Alone and lonely, but for my dog, my pal. How lonely and alone it all seemed when we were alone. Seemed that cruel city of fears was so hard on little newsboys when they were alone. Outside the great subway kiosk, the snow was falling. But inside was a great, hungry, yearning for love. Love
and forth. How she could sit there, my little bublik. I can hear her sitting there now, alone in the Russian steppe, inhaling forth. Then came the war. Revolution! Chaos! And then... Well...
My friends have lost today and rise already for my sweet baby Andy. And I'm not kidding. For my sweet baby Andy. It's getting sour. For my sweet baby Andy. Let's find a finish. For my sweet baby Andy.
Picture that recitative really had me crying in my board.
Pretty sad, eh?
Lugubrious. But thanks for dropping around to the hall, Miss. You must come again anytime.
Well, how about next week?
Well, maybe. I think we better let my sweet baby blow over first.
We'll let you know. You see, we have some.
Well, I was just thinking that maybe if you had room next week, I could.
Say.
Yes, Ken.
Now?
Now.
Wonder why I'm near you, even though I've been denied. I'm inclined to be a little on the sentimental side. I suppose I could forget you if I had an ounce of pride. But I guess I can't help being on the sentimental side. Why should I gaze? Laugh it off and say farewell. Say it just didn't wear well. But I'm not that way. I'm in hope you think it over and perhaps be satisfied with a simple sort of person on the sentimental side.
Carpenter, on the sentimental side, one nut Hershey to win. Would you like to get a little wager down, John Scott?
I like them all, Bing.
You do?
But, of course, I don't know anybody that can sing them quite the way you can.
Oh, dang it, John, you're just saying that.
No, sir,
Bing. I got to.
No, I mean it.
Now, this sounds like the prelude to a touch. Do I have to owe you a quid or two, John Scott?
No, I'm not fooling, Bing. You know, honestly, if you knew how I envy you your ability to sing, honestly,
couch for Trotter, Ken. I think he's beginning to crack.
I think he's already cracked. Can't anyone show a little appreciation around here without being ridiculed?
Now, if you're going to get arbitrary, John Scott, I feel as I'm at liberty to say that I bow to no man in my admiration of your talent.
Well, it's about time you said something like that.
What, John Scott? I'm
I'm perpetually and with true sincerity praising you and your ever-loving 18. But you have never given me an opportunity to demonstrate my ability to imitate the birds and the beasts of the forest.
The birds of the forest?
Well, John Scott, I never knew. Please turn on. What'll it be, bird or beast?
Well,
which would you prefer? The African aardvark, the duck-billed platypus, or the Australian grackle?
Well, I hate to be mean about this, but if the choice rests with me, John Scott, I'm a terrible fan for the duck-billed platypus.
Then I'll give you... Well, I'll give you the mating cry.
The mating cry? Well, maybe we better have the Australian grackle. If you make with the mating cry of a duck-billed platypus, the joints have to be full of platypuses before we can turn around.
Very well. Then here it is, and this is how the Australian grackle calls across the Australian bush at early dawning. Are you ready?
Oh, I can hardly wait.
Very well, then. Here is the haunting cry of the Australian grackle.
Well, Bob, I'll tell you, I don't know what in the world you're going to talk about tonight.
Why?
My horse won a race today. Goody, goody, goody.
I don't know how that is. I guess those milk wagon horses are used to all kinds of weather. No, I wasn't going to talk about your horses anyhow, Bing. I was just thinking over there about Major Auer feeling so bad because he played so long, you know, and this one town didn't appreciate it. Now, I want to tell him he don't want to feel bad about that because what one town considers entertainment, maybe another town wouldn't like at all. It ain't no reflection on Misha. Now, I bet that grapefruit on the piano, I bet that made a big hit around over the country. But here in the Kraft Music Hall, it ain't such a novelty because every Thursday after Thursday, Bing Crosby gets up here and sings with four or five rocks in his throat. But, you know, I understand those things. Now, Misha was giving us, telling us something about show business. I understand about that because I come from a theatrical family. Because the first show I was ever on was one that Grandpa Snazzy got together down home. He says, now, if you people come on, he says, and join my show, he says, after we pick it in around Arkansas here in Crawford County, he says, I think I can get the walking circuit. And we says, what do you mean the walking circuit? And he says, Milwaukee, Waukegan, Kishwaukee, and Walker Show. And there wasn't anybody in our show that wasn't some of my kinfolk. Even my Uncle Skinny Flint, well, he's my stingy uncle. He sold tickets on the show, and I can just see him sitting there at the ticket window now with tickets in one hand and a wet sponge in the other. The wet sponge was to wrap on the window when people forgot to shave. Misha couldn't understand why in the world the people in this one town didn't like his show. Well, now, I know why the people didn't like our show. It was just because we had a bad show, that's all. Our show was so bad, the people paid extra for seats back of the post. And I remember just as well, the curtain rose promptly at 8:30, and the audience rose at 8:35. Well, sir, you know, the one time, though, I thought sure ahead. Because we come off after the first act, and I heard some loud clapping out there. And I turned around, I said, just listen to those people applaud. And the stage manager in that town, we was playing Alma. That week, Alma, Arkansas. That was at the Happy Day Theater. And when I heard this applause, this clapping, I said, just listen to people applaud. And the stage manager says, that ain't applause. Says, that's the people slapping mosquitoes. Well, there was a little lull, and then I never heard such loud clapping in my life. And I turned to him. I said, "You mean that ain't applause now?" And he says, "No, that's the mosquitoes flapping back at the people." But I think the reason why we didn't do so good in our show is just simply because my kinfolk didn't want to do the things that they was cut out for. Now, my Aunt Peachy Sims, that's the old maid aunt, she wanted to play romantic parts, but she wasn't cut out for it at all. Why, she's got the kind of a face that haunts ghosts. And she insisted on playing a romantic part, and Grandpa Snazzy told her, he says, "Now, you don't want to play this romantic part because the hero has to come in and handle you rough, and he has to tie you up with ropes, and then he takes you in his arms, and he showers you with kisses." And she says, this was a new fellow we had that day, and she says, "Is he tall, dark, and handsome?" And Grandpa said, "Yes." And Aunt Peachy says, "Well, he ain't going to need no rope." And then there was the other cousin of mine, my cousin Lobelia. Now, she had the cutest dance you ever saw, if she'd have stuck with it. It was a little dance that's kind of an oriental number, kind of a snaky thing. She originated herself while she was trying to put on her union suit and enough for birth. And it was the cutest dance, but she wasn't doing it because when she was in St. Louis one time, she saw an actress come out and dance, and at the finish of the dance, the actress kicked her little slipper off, and it flew out, and a man in the audience caught it. So when she come home, she insisted on doing that kind of a dance. And at the finish of her dance, she stopped and smiled, and she kicked, and her shoe flew out and knocked four men out in the audience. And then now you take my Uncle Slug, for instance. That's my drinking uncle. He wouldn't do the part that he was fitted for at all. He wanted to play the hero. And all through the play, the hero kept offering him a drink in this play, and Uncle Slug turned it down. And he went all through the play that way and did it fine and turned down the drinks, but at the minute the curtain went down, he had a nervous breakdown. And that's now, he went on that way, and nobody in that audience knew how he was suffering during that play, just like tonight. I bet you that nobody in this audience knows that I'm doing my act with a heavy heart. As I told you, I'm in show business, and we have to go on and smile, you know. Laugh, clown, laugh. You've heard that. And tonight, just before I came on, it ain't nothing to laugh at, boys. And besides, even if it was, it ain't the time to laugh yet. But just before I come on to this show tonight, I got a telegram that Grandma Snazzy was hurt. And she was hurt. She fell off of the platform at the Burbank Theater. That would have been so much better if I just said runway. You know? Now then, tonight I'm going to play as my bazooka solo. I'm going to dedicate it to that grand old street that means so much to show business. Will you give my regards to Broadway, Johnny? What's the matter, Bob? You quit?
Oh, Broadway ain't going to make no sucker out of me.
Well, hot or cold, Bob, when you start blubbering down that plumber's blunderbuss, the whole world stands ready to trade the siren call of the pipes of Pan for the bronchial braying of your pipes of pandemonium. Although few realize it, the truth can now be told. It was really the sound of your bazooka cutting across the acrid air of no man's land that turned the tide of battle in the World War, caused our adversaries to sue for a hasty peace in November of 1918. As you bazooked in France in 1918, American troops training in England tried to teach baseball to King George. On this side of the water, 70 public schools in the city of New York were forced to close for lack of coal. In spite of lightless nights, which banned the advertising illumination on what was once called the Gay White Way. In fact, little happened in 1918 that didn't have to do something with the war. Even the popular songs are mostly based on that theme, and one of the better ones, written that year, I think it was the greatest sheet music seller of all times, and the work of Dick Whiting, one of our most beloved songwriters, went something like this.
Smile, oh, smile. You kiss me, sad adieu.
Something else. This, it is to our advantage to have you remember. Remind them, Ken.
Does your family have the habit of springing impromptu parties in the living room or kitchen? Well, that's one of the things that makes a house a home. But it means that the homemaker must have a well-stocked refrigerator. For the emergency shelf in your refrigerator, we'd like to suggest Kraft cheese spread, several different kinds. Then, when the party spirit moves, out come those delicious spreads, the box of crackers, whatever the crowd likes to drink, and your snack tray is ready. And what makes the Kraft cheese spread doubly ripe for the tray is the attractive swanky twig glasses that they're packed in. You just set out the glasses and let each guest take his choice. No extra dishes to wash after the party is over. What's more, when the cheese spreads are all used up, you have these smart glasses to use again and again for beverages. Have you seen the new tulip pattern swanky twig glasses? Kraft consulted 2,000 housewives before selecting this new design. The tulip pattern was their choice. That's why we're so sure that you'll want to collect the whole set of these new tulip design swanky twig glasses. That's okay and smart and modern. Start your set tomorrow by ordering several different Kraft cheese spreads from your dealer. Maybe you don't know me with my new set of vocal cords.
Oh, yes, a little gravel there.
Yes, a bit.
How do you do, Carpenter? I trust that this unexpected visit means that you've decided to turn a deaf ear to the proselytizing promises of that unscrupulous bell-ringing coach at Peachy Institute.
Well, yes, Dr. Crosby, it does.
Good, Carpenter. Excellent indeed. You've made me very happy, my boy.
Yeah, me too. Oh, what do I want with that old stadium that they promised to build around me? I've got higher ambitions.
You're darn tootin'.
Yes, sir.
What did your sweetheart at Sigmund High say to your choice, Carpenter?
Oh, what do I care about her? I said I've got higher ambitions.
Does she realize, Carpenter, that she's no longer the one to whom your thoughts turn when seized with the desire to, catch a little woo?
Well, yeah, I wrote and told her that she and I were through.
You did it?
Yes, sir. I've got higher ambitions. You know, I didn't realize it till I saw a Yank at Oxford.
Oh, I see. After you saw Maureen O'Sullivan in a Yank at Oxford, that you realized you had these higher ambitions, eh?
Yes, sir. And, well, I guess I was pretty brutal the way I wrote to my girl. See, maybe I was kind of a cad, but I just broke it off just like that.
I only hope, Carpenter, and I'm sure she agrees with me, that you didn't let O'Sullivan make a heel out of you.
Well, no, Dr. Crosby. It's just that,
Well, out with it, Carpenter. KMH always stands ready to do everything possible to further laudable ambitions.
Well, Dr. Crosby, I want to go where they really have some fine bells to ring. You know, bells with years and years of tradition behind them. Bells that linger long in the memory.
Carpenter, you don't mean it.
Yes. I want to go to Oxford.
Well, I suppose it might be arranged, Carpenter, a Rhodes Scholarship, perhaps, but you must give me a bit of time to think, and while I do, there'll be a brief pause at the station identification.
Well, have you decided, Dr. Crosby? Will it be all right if I transfer to Oxford?
Patience, Carpenter. We must first find out if Oxford wants you.
Wants me, sir?
Yes.
Well, with all the bells they have around there, why, Dr. Crosby, I'd kill him at Oxford.
Yes, I'm just a little apprehensive of that, Carpenter. Just give me a little time. I'll send it to you when I've made my decision.
Oh, but this is urgent, Dr. Crosby.
Now, run along, Carpenter. Easy gets everything. There's people waiting for me, you know. Professor Burns, the Paul Taylor Group, Maureen O'Sullivan, the foursome, John Scott Trotter, in his educable 18. And as you go out, Carpenter, would you ask Professor Trotter to come in, please?
I'm in.
Then let's get right to work. The first thing we have to take up is, I believe, in the music department. Thank you. Memory, if I'm not mistaken.
Here it is.
Thanks for the memory of rainy afternoons, those swingy Harlem tunes, motor trips and burning lips, burning toast and prunes. How lovely it was. Thanks for the memories of candlelight wine, castles on the Rhine, your cozy chair and parties where we sang Sweet Adeline. How lovely it was. Many's the time that we feasted, many's the time that we fasted. Oh, well, it was well while it lasted. Say, we did have fun, but no harm done. And thanks for the memories of sunburns at the shore, nights in Singapore. You might have been a headache, but you never were a bore. So thank you so much.
At Oxford, Maureen O'Sullivan of the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer forces is, well, at least to me, the perfect personification of true Irish beauty. I guess that's no news to those of our clients who have seen the lovely blue-eyed O'Sullivan in any one of the many really big pictures that she's lent her charm and talent to in the few years that she's been here in Hollywood.
Sure, and it's a fine one you are with words, Mr. Crosby, whose mother was a Harrigan. And when did you kiss the Blarney Stone?
Kiss it, Maureen. I've never been close enough to hold hands with it even.
I could tell that by your brogue.
Yes, and yet I can see by looking at you, Maggie, that it's the beauty of the girls and not kissing the Blarney Stone that fills an Irishman's mouth with words.
Have you really never been to Ireland, Dean?
No, but it's a trip I've been promising myself for a long time, Maureen.
Oh, you ought to keep that promise pretty soon, because Ireland's lovelier than ever these days.
I suppose you got a chance to run up there when you were across this winter, didn't you?
Well, I couldn't be that close without going over to see the family.
Oh, the folks still living there?
Mm-hmm. Father, mother, three younger sisters, and a brother.
Now, if you played your cards right, Maureen, I kind of think you could get Bing to swap you a couple of extra brothers for one of them sisters.
Well, I think Bing would have to take that up with headquarters.
Right, I'm cabling your Irish head office immediately.
Well, I hope the deal doesn't go through. Those sisters were pretty valuable to me once.
Only one?
Well, particularly one. If it hadn't been for them, I probably would never have been allowed to come to America to work in pictures.
They want to get you out of the house, is that it?
Oh, I never thought of that, just they did.
Well, with you out of the way, all them younger sisters would get promoted to put this deal open.
Well, you see, it was like this. After Frank Borzage made a screen test, he thought I was a bit young. So, Borzage told Daddy that if he really didn't want me to leave home, he could tell him, and then he'd simply say that the test wasn't good, and that would be the end of the whole thing.
Yeah, but where did the three younger sisters come in?
Right now. So Daddy said he'd go home and think it over. When he got there, he found my sisters getting ready for bed. And each of them finished their prayers by saying, and please make Maureen's test a good one.
Oh, that did it, huh?
My father's that soft-hearted.
Mm-hmm. You find Ireland changed much?
Oh, it's happier than ever. They're down to the Cayley for recreation and Camorleying at their work.
The Cayley? I don't think that one hit the local swing then, yes.
No, and it probably won't. You see, it's sort of a revolt against the modern dancing.
Back to the jig, is that it?
No, Ken is definitely not a jig.
Well, then, if it's a revolt against the modern dancing, it must be more like the polka,
no,
the minuet, or possibly the gavotte.
No, but you're getting closer to it. As a matter of fact, the Ken is really like the Big Apple.
Oh, Nice getting away from modern dancing.
Well, now that Bing's had his dancing lesson, Maureen, what in the world is this Camorleying you're talking about?
You never hear of Camorleying, Bob?
No. Get out of the way for old and supper. You too late for your supper.
Yes, that's what
out of the way, out of the way, out of the way.
You see, only Camorleying is singing while you work.
Sort of like this, Bob. Oh, I'm hoeing potatoes and making them grow.
Yes, or I might say. Or I might say, for instance, I'm explaining Camorleying to Crosby and Burns.
Put it all together and adds up to whistle while you work.
Mm. Well, they're getting a lot of work done over there now, Bing.
Mm-hmm.
Ireland today is a fine place to be living in and working.
Bet, and I'll wager that they go as heavy for you, Maggie, as you do for them, now that you've become a grand lady of the cinema.
Are you meaning to say, Bing Crosby, that they didn't like me before I left for America?
Now you needn't be taking that attitude.
Who's taking an attitude?
Crosby, back of me hand to both of you.
Like I don't think I've heard before in Ireland. Where'd you pick it up, Bob?
Sure, it was said to me by a cop in Delancey Street in New York.
Or the County Delancey, is it?
Just across the river from the County Hoboken.
Oh.
But could you give us a demonstration of the more familiar brogues, Maureen?
Well, I tell you, being in school in London and in Paris and living in Hollywood all this time, I'm afraid it's not the brogue pretty well off by a tongue. But I'll try. When I was home this time, an old woman from our village who hadn't seen me since I became a movie actress, she looked at me. She said, oh, glory be to God, I thought everybody that worked in pictures had a silver face.
Well, how would they read that same line in another part of the country?
Well, supposing I met that old lady in Cork, she'd say, glory be to God, I thought all picture people had silver faces.
It was too bad you couldn't have stayed over in the old country till after St. Patrick's Day.
Oh, I'll find a way to celebrate it here, all right.
Sure, what would he be doing on St. Patrick's Day, Maggie? Don't tell me now. Wait now. Let me try and guess.
It's the Thursday, isn't it?
It is that.
Then I'll be listening to Crosby, whose mother was a Harrigan, celebrating the day right here in the hall.
Oh, the Lord love you. That's sweet of you. What will you be doing? And what will you be after doing before that?
Well, before that, I might be sitting by my fireplace or in my garden. In any case, I'll be singing a song that my brother and I used to sing when we were very little, and it's called If You're Irish. Of course, I think anybody's a little bit silly then to try and sing with competition.
Particularly
me, who can't sing at all.
I doubt that.
I'll try and tell you how it goes.
Well, you get it started, Maggie, and I'll guarantee to take some and leave some.
All right. Here it is. If you're Irish, come into the parlor. There's a welcome there for you. And if your name is in your pack, as long as you come from Ireland, there's a welcome on the mat. If you come from the Mount of Moran or Killarney's lake so blue, we'll sing a song and make a fuss. Whoever you are, you're one of us. If you're Irish, this is the place for you.
Thanks, Maureen. So far, that's certainly the best invitation that I've had for the 17th of March. Thanks for being with us on the 3rd of it.
The pleasure was mine, Bing, and good evening to you.
And the same to you, Maggie. Why don't you stick around while the foursome with their ocarinas and their tin whistle give us their idea of Walt Disney's version of this, some of that chameleon that you were talking about. Go to work, men.
Thank you. Between a seminar in Oriental music and a sideshow on the Midway Plaisance. Listen now to Swami Trotter and his fascinating figure. Yippee.
imaginative, Johnny. Certainly highly provocative. It's solid indeed. You know, I'd take another hinge through that sideshow right now, but the barker across the midway there is getting ready to pitch his steel. Pitch it, Jan.
Here's a little checklist for you of the 8 different Kraft cheese spreads. As I name them, check off in your mind the ones your family is going to enjoy this weekend. Here they are. Kraft Pimento and Olive Pimento Cream Spreads. The two spreads called K and P's. Kraft Roquefort Cream Spreads. Kraft Pineapple Cream Spread, Old English Spread, and Kraft Limburger. Are you acquainted with all these spreads at your house? Every single one is delicious, so you'd better know them all. And they're all packed in the new tulip pattern, swanky swig glasses. Sparkling little glasses, decorated with gay pots of spring tulips. Glasses that you'll use again and again for all kinds of beverages. See the new tulip pattern swanky swig glasses at your dealer's tomorrow. And stock up on the tempting Kraft cheese spread.
Let's walk for old time's sake, darling, before you go. Give the heart you broke a break. Didn't he take you from me? He'll never miss those few moments that it may take. Darling, let's walk.
Tonight, right where we left off. And we're especially anxious to have you with us next Thursday, us being John Scott's father and Burns, Carpenter, and the Paul Danner Group, and myself, as well as Miriam Hopkins of the Cinema Circles. We've invited David Niven, also of the cinema, as well as Morris Rosenthal, one of the finest pianists on the concert circuit. If you'd like to join us, catch KMH next Thursday. Till then, good night.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.